You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 15th of February 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at gold. In a world where instability seems to be rising, geopolitically but also financially, there is increasing attention on this precious metal as an alternative. We'll explore the historical link between bullion and real money, consider the fundamentals in more detail, and look at gold's evolution from the earliest commerce to exchange-traded funds. But we start with a look back at gold's historic link to money. Matthew Hart is a journalist and author of Gold, The Race for the World's Most Seductive Metal. He explains the development of gold as common currency.
I guess the most important thing in the history of gold and its relationship to money is the invention of gold money. Because before that, of course, gold could be used as and was sometimes used as a medium of exchange. But when gold money was invented in 635 BC in the Kingdom of Lydia in Asia Minor, that, of course, democratized gold in a sense. It sort of, in one move, gold exited the realm of being a sort of purely sacred, kingly substance reserved for the use of the governing and powerful elite, and became something that passed into much more everyday use. It became the main medium and indeed the sort of rocket fuel of commerce.
And Matthew also brings us more up to date with the 20th century impact of the gold standard and explains why that solution ceased to be sustainable.
If your currency was backed up by gold, well, then people could have faith in it. So they could trust that the contract they were executing was going to have the value in 10 years or whatever that it had right now, because they knew what the money denominated in the contract was backed up by, which was gold. It's just that historically, that's how we've come to think of gold as ultimately real money. Of course, the truth is it's not money at all anymore. Money is money. Gold is something that's traded every day, and its price goes all over the place, as people have seen. So unless you have a system in which the price of gold is going to be dictated by the governments that issue currency, unless you can have that, you can't have a gold standard, because you can't have a currency backed up by a commodity, a metal, freely traded and open to manipulation by the people who mine it and trade in it.
So that's the background. What about the fundamentals, like the issue of where gold is mined and where demand comes from? Julian Garin is UBS Head of Global Commodity Strategies. He explains some of the dramatic changes that have recently shaken up the demand side.
There's been some dramatic changes in the composition of gold demand over the course of the last kind of 3 or 4 years. So when typically kind of we look at standard gold demand, it's been kind of largely a combination of jewelry and investment purchases. However, the investment purchases accelerated dramatically really from around 2001, 2002, as ETFs were starting to be introduced into the market. And that then took a further very substantial leg up in 2008 as the Fed started its QE programs. What we've seen really since around April of 2011, as kind of there was an increasing perception that the Fed would move to taper and then kind of end QE, and that rates may in due course start rising, was that those ETF purchases, which had kind of accounted for around 30% of additional gold demand over and above all the jewelry and other uses, that basically reversed, and we started seeing the selling of ETFs take off 30% of gold demand. So when we look at gold, we're kind of, well, there may be dynamics kind of surrounding Indian demand, etc., in terms of the fundamental jewelry purchases. What really moves the needle is the ETF purchasing.
Dominic Schneider is UBS Head of Commodity Research and Head of APAC Forex in CIO Wealth Management.
I think if you look into the demand side, one of the big change, or let's say shocker, was clearly 2013 with a sharp decline in holdings of ETF. people were thinking, well, gold is not needed anymore, it's an insurance good. People were much more confident about the global economy. So we have seen ongoing ETF outflows. Now, the outflows continued in 2014 at a much smaller pace. So it wasn't any more than 900 tons around that we saw in 2013, so a much lower number, around the 300 tons. But we still think that's likely to continue as monetary policy normalizes in the U.S. I think still a lot of people who hold gold probably not going to continue or at least see limited value, at least in the short run. So that theme remains there. On the other side, what we see is that demand in Eastern Asia or in Asia in general is pretty strong. Now, you can say that demand year on year has declined, let's say, in China, but we also need to keep in mind that in, let's say, 2013, we have seen an exceptional year, and that's why we need to take that a little bit with cautious. But generally, demand is growing in Asia, and it's likely to do so, given that the fact that wealth creation here brings much more jewelry consumption, but also from an investment point, investors here in Asia are eyeing towards the yellow metal.
And what about the supply side? Here's Dominik Schneider again.
I think what we have seen is quite a decent growth in supply. I mean, decent growth is low single-digit growth, but it was quite decent. I mean, given the sharper increase in price that we've seen in recent years. With the decline that happened since 2003, what we have seen is that also mine supply growth is coming down. And I think looking into 2015, we're probably going to have no growth anymore in mine supply, simply out of the fact that prices are trading into the cost curve of supply. And I think that limits the output growth in gold mining.
Joni Tevez, precious metals strategist at UBS, says China is one of the most interesting key markets for production.
The top producers of gold are China, Russia, Australia, US, and Peru. And China in particular is quite interesting because it is a top producer, but it's also one of the biggest consumers, which kind of tells you that the demand out of China is actually quite sizable. Because in addition to the stuff that they actually produce onshore, they still need to import a lot of metal in. So just looking at China's output or estimated output in 2014, it was about 465 tons, but their total demand was over 800 tons. So the rest of that, obviously, they've had to import from abroad.
Here's Julian Garin again. He outlines what he believes is the critical issue for gold production.
One of the critical issues with gold is that the mines tend to be kind of smaller than a typical base metal mine. They tend to be shorter life, and they tend to see quite significant escalations in costs as they move towards the end of their lives. And now that's particularly important in places like South Africa, where the mines are deep and where grades have been falling. So cost inflation has been very, very clear in those areas. One of the things that had been happening kind of during the bull market was that CEOs of gold companies basically became very aggressive in their expansion plans, hence offsetting some of those kind of natural geological drags on gold production. And so you did see kind of continual increases in supply during the bull market. But since gold peaked back in 2011, we've seen a radical change in attitude amongst the major gold mining companies, and they've been pulling back from expansion plans, consolidating and cutting costs.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at the evolution of gold. Time to consider gold's journey now in more detail, taking in two of its historical roles in the jewellery trade and, of course, as currency. More recently, gold has been viewed as something of a hedge, a safe haven in times of economic uncertainty. Here's Matthew Hart again.
The big driver of the gold price is investment. That's what drives the gold price. So the fact that gold got up close to $2,000 an ounce, like above $1,900, scraping $1,900 an ounce, that was entirely due to the frenzy to own gold that followed the collapse of the Lehman Brothers and the banking crisis that ensued. This prompted an appetite for gold. People saw gold as the historic, stable item, something that will preserve its value through these crises, and the gold price started to run up. At the same time as that happened, new products were coming online that enabled people to buy gold much more easily, so that they could indulge their uneasiness. so that the, let's just say, the investor sentiment could be met and sort of sold into much, much more easily. Particularly one product, a gold ETF or exchange-traded fund created by the World Gold Council, which is a sort of marketing organization owned by the world's gold miners. And they created this fund where basically you can buy a share of the fund, and what supports the share you buy is gold bullion. So they own gold bullion, and you're buying a marker on gold bullion. You don't actually get gold bullion, but you're buying a share of a fund that is backed by gold bullion. That gold is all stored in the vaults of the HSBC Bank in London, because London, of course, is the big gold market, the biggest bullion market in the world by far. And this product and other products like it that were invented when it became apparent how popular and what a demand there was for such products that allowed people to speculate on bullion, all those new products helped people trade gold. And so the price ran up because you could now buy and sell gold as easily as you could buy and sell a stock.
But is there any real substance to this notion of gold as a safe investment? Over the long haul, there's little evidence that gold does what it says on the tin. Is it true then that it doesn't really act as an inflation hedge? We asked Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, about gold as an inflation hedge.
Our view is that over the long haul, you know, there's no actual evidence that gold does what it says on the tin. It doesn't really act as an inflation hedge, and just, for our mind, has bond-like returns but with equity-like risk. So we no longer have it in our strategic asset allocations, which we manage on behalf of clients, and in fact we see downside for the gold price to around $10,050 per ounce over the next 12 months. Instead, we're recommending clients focus on income-providing assets, in particular U.S. equities and U.S. high yield.
So is there an issue here that gold only offers bond-like returns but with equity-like risk attached? Here's Dominic Schneider again.
Well, I think what gold has is a lot of volatility. I think gold is still, to some degree, two things. One, it's a currency which has no yield. A currency tends to be very volatile. So I think that's one factor. That's where the volatility comes from. But also gold is a jewelry. I think a lot of people look into gold and say right now there is no need for gold. It doesn't protect anymore versus uncertainty. We need to be clear what kind of uncertainty gold can protect you against. I think gold protects you if monetary policy is imprudent, if balance sheet balloon around the world, then gold can give you a protection if the financial system is almost collapsing and people are not sure about what is the counterparty risk, and gold inherits no counterparty risk, then obviously gold is also gives you a kind of protection. But maybe also we need to think about gold not just about short-term horizon. Some people hold gold from a generation perspective, and here gold has retained value. Actually, if you look back some millennia, gold has over time kept its value compared to all other currencies in the world, which A, don't have the track record, and B, have devalued or their value dropped systematically.
And we'll be looking at the question of lasting value, and in particular central banks' enthusiasm for reserves, next. So there's still a certain attachment that countries have to their reserves. The situation when Nixon came to power in the US was perhaps the best example, according to Matthew Hart.
Well, when Nixon came to power, that was a gusher. A huge amount of bullion was flowing out of the United States to other countries. And it was headline news, front page headline news at the time of Nixon's accession to power. So what the Americans did was simply cancel the old system. Unilaterally, they announced that the dollar was no longer convertible. They announced it on Sunday night on live TV. Nixon just appeared and said, "It's the end of the party. From now on, if you've got a US dollar, that's what you're going to get. The green paper bill you have in your hand, that's a dollar. Don't try to cash it in because you're just going to get another piece of paper." And that was the end of the gold standard. That was basically, the gold standard was assassinated on live TV, and it's, of course, has not come back, and it's not going to come back. That doesn't mean to say that central banks don't still like gold. The Germans famously want to repatriate their old gold holdings that have been held since the, well, for many, many, many years in the gold vaults of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And of course, China's building its gold reserves hugely.
That's the view from certain central banks. But what about the wider view going forward? What are the future prospects for gold? It's quite negative in dollar terms, according to Dominic Schneider.
Well, I think the outlook is quite negative for gold in dollar terms. I think this is important to recognize, maybe not for somebody else who is holding yen as a reference currency, where you see the yen weakening on an ongoing basis. The reason is monetary policy in the U.S. should normalize, and we expect interest rates to go up. Rates towards the end of the year into 2016 should be around 1%. And if I look, for example, what the market is pricing in, then I think the expectation still has quite a room to go, and I think that's a negative factor. What really drives gold performance is actually real interest rates. So as we are right now in an environment where inflation is pretty low and in some periods of time, I guess in the next 1 or 2 quarters, in some cases we're going to see deflationary developments. The outlook of higher rates clearly increases either the real rate or in some country reduces the negative real interest rates, and that's generally bad for gold. So that's why we're looking into an environment where gold falls to 1,050 over a 12-month horizon.
What does Julian Garin think?
I've been studying the gold market for 20-odd years now, and I found that it's not a consistent inflation hedge. It's not a consistent deflation hedge. The way gold behaves is a probability indicator of whether the Fed will be reflating the world in 6 months' time. So in a sense, it's a call on what's happening to the U.S. economy and how the Fed is interpreting those changes. Now, we've been very positive on gold coming into this year, and our reason was that we started to see signs that deflation taking place outside the US was starting to get exported into the US, and also signals that liquidity within the US was starting to dry up. And that's particularly an issue because after multiple QEs, the private sector has found itself much less able to generate its own liquidity.
And here with a final thought from the client side is Simon Smiles in Zurich. For him, it's all a question of changing perceptions.
I think it's probably a trifurcation of views. You know, some clients continue to firmly believe in gold as a safe haven and portfolio diversifier. Others, though, have lost faith over the last 2 years, 2 to 3 years, and sold down their holdings aggressively, while others never believed in the shiny yellow metal.
That was Simon Smiles bringing us to the end of this 19th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.